Hey everyone, welcome to the Being Patient podcast. I'm Deborah Kahn, founder of Being Patient. When my mom was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease, I decided to use my skills as a journalist in a different way. Frustrated by the lack of information on science and the inability to get different expert opinions, I decided to quit my job at the Wall Street Journal to create a better platform for people impacted by dementia. We are a community where news and information is created by our team of journalists. We ask tough questions and we simplify the science so that anyone can understand. We don't only cover disease, but delve into the latest research on what it takes to keep our brains healthy. We invite the experts and ask your questions. Here's today's podcast. I hope you enjoy it.
Hey. Great. Hi, everyone. I think we're up and live. My name is Deborah Kahn. I'm the founder of Being Patient. We are here today with Sarah Widmeyer. She's joining us today to discuss her experience caring for her mother, Elaine, who sadly passed away in 2022. And really how this experience set her off on a path to advocate more for gender diversity in clinical research. Sarah, thanks so much for joining us and welcome.
Thank you so much.
So let's just start first and foremost. I mean, you know, a lot of us who join in this cause, we have a family member like myself. I also have a mom living with Alzheimer's. Tell me a little bit about your mom's story before we talk about the advocacy.
Sure. It's a pleasure to talk about my mom. She was a real trailblazer. She was a fierce advocate for women and women's rights. And when I talked about what I wanted to do when I grew up, and I talked about the wedding and the church and the dress and the flowers, and she said, okay, that took 7 minutes. Now what? And it was a great role model and coach as I built my career, being a working mom and a career mom. She was always kind of zany and we used to call her Mom Unedited, which I think while it was a charming and wonderful trait that she had, it hid the advancement of Alzheimer's, because it became difficult to distinguish what was mom unedited and what was sadly this disease that started to take over. But loving mom, grandma, and wife of 60 years.
And how long did she have Alzheimer's before she died in 2022?
It's hard to know. My dad passed sadly in May 2019. And that's when we really noticed it. And with Alzheimer's, as many listeners might know, when a traumatic event or a very stress-filled event happens, or even a changed routine happens, that's when you fall down an Alzheimer's cliff, and you hope to normalize there. It doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, you go back up. You fall and then you try to normalize at that new level. So really, that was the first time we said, okay, there really is something going on here. So that would have been May 2019, and she passed in November of 2022.
That's quite fast,
which tells that likely it was advancing long before that. And now that I've gotten past a lot of the grief, the heavy grief, I don't think you ever totally get past the grief, but you know, my brother and I are trying to figure out, okay, when did you notice something was off? And I think I noticed as early as 2016 when we took my parents to Disney World with the family. And I described it like putting puppies in a box. You know, you'd have two in and three would go off in a different direction, one in and then the rest. And mom was always the one off in a different direction. She was always stumbling around, kind of getting lost in her surroundings. And we kind of, again, laughed it off, mom unedited, mom being zany, mom being childlike. But no, I think probably looking back, it might've started as early as 2016.
Are you confident that in the Alzheimer's diagnosis? Because I think there's a lot of people who, you know, it's often called Alzheimer's, but they're kind of scratching their heads and saying, I wonder if it really was. Like, how was her whole diagnosis experience?
We had to really push. To your point, it is difficult to get a diagnosis. And I think it's a best guess at best, you know, with all of these symptoms, it makes sense that this is likely what she has. I think many would know that you really can't get a definitive diagnosis unless you do an autopsy at the end, which we weren't interested in doing. I mean, it really looked and smelled like Alzheimer's, so we assumed that it was. Her diagnosis was vascular Alzheimer's, which was a combination of high blood pressure induced Alzheimer's. So we tried to control with blood pressure medication and lifestyle changes. But I think it was too little too late at that point.
So tell me a little bit about you becoming an advocate really for women's brain health. Like what was it about your experience with your mom that made you make that transition from someone who is caring for a loved one to someone who's now advocating?
Yeah, I love that question. So thank you. My career has been built in wealth management. And one of the things that I stumbled down a rabbit hole of women's brains. And it started with the way that we think about money and the way that we think about financial planning and how money is for us, for many women, attached to emotional drives of security and safety. And out of that comes a different way that we want to be dealt with when it comes to wealth management. And so in the brain differences, that got me going into education around Alzheimer's and dementia, which many listeners may not know is primarily a women's disease. More than 70% of the cases of Alzheimer's are actually diagnosed to women. And yet most of the drug therapies, most of the research that is done even today is targeted at male subjects. So, you think about Advil. Advil was never tested on a woman. We have different organ sizes, different metabolic rates, and we excrete chemicals in our system differently than men, never tested on a female. So this got me kind of going into the whole field of Alzheimer's. And I actually joined the board of Women's Brain Health Initiative, which is chaired by Lynn Poslins here in Toronto, Canada. It's a North American organization, but it's headquartered here in Toronto. And so I became a board member of Women's Brain Health. And Women's Brain Health Organization, there's really two main purposes of Women's Brain Health Initiative. The first is to empower women, empower all people really, but empower women with knowledge and education so that we can help preserve our brain health. And there's lifestyle changes that we can make that actually significantly decrease the risk of Alzheimer's and dementia. And then the second reason, of course, for this organization is to fund research that addresses the gender gap in research around women's brains.
I mean, you talk about that disparity between gender-focused research. And when I first started being patient, was just amazed to find out that women weren't even allowed into scientific research until the late 1970s, which really isn't that far, a long time ago. So, I mean, no wonder we're out of place today. Whenever we talk about gender differences, though, in terms of the relationship of like this disease, Alzheimer's, with the brain, hormones are often mentioned and menopause are often mentioned. So how much research to date is going into specifically from what you know as a board member of this organization, how much is going into, is there more going into the relationship of the drop in estrogen and brain health? And I think we have a long way to go before we come to some answers, if I'm not correct.
I think sadly you are correct. Women's Brain Health Initiative certainly funds research around this, and there's definitely a connection between your ovaries and your brain. And it's amazing really to me that we're here in the year 2024 and we're still figuring out how women's brains work. You know, when you're going through perimenopause and then into menopause, a lot of women complain about brain fog. And it's a real thing. It's the memory that starts to go, short-term memory. You start to forget things, and you have a hard time concentrating in some cases. And definitely, I mean, it's for every woman to decide for themselves, but a hormone replacement therapy can do a world of good in terms of replacing some of those lost hormone balances. But to answer your question, really, so much more work needs to be done, which again, why it's really important that organizations such as the one that I support are there to help fund that kind of research.
Yeah, and also to kind of to fund that research so that the messaging, because I mean I'm just comparing my own experience with my sisters. I mean, we have very similar genetics, and my sister had a male doctor who said, "Oh, absolutely not. You shouldn't go on hormone replacement." And I have a doctor who said, "Yes, you should," right? So the only way this confusion is going to settle itself is to really have more research, right? And the proof. But there's still in 2024 a lot of different messaging going on to patients or people about what they should and they shouldn't do in terms of hormones. So are you encouraged, or I mean, you know, how aside from like, you know, I want to ask you about the types of research you're targeting to fund, but also, is it getting better out there? Are there more gender-focused research going on now that we're really aware and the problem is spoken of?
So again, I think our organization has done a lot of good. We've certainly raised money, and we fund a research chair with Dr. Jillian Einstein, who is out of the University of Toronto. We work in collaboration with other bodies to provide funding for this necessary research, but there's so much more that should be done. You know, it's better than it was even 5 years ago, 10 years ago, but you know, do we need more and more support and advocacy in this area? Absolutely, 100% we do. But you know, there are things that you can do in the meantime around lifestyle. There's lifestyle choices that we can make that do dramatically decrease the risk of Alzheimer's. At the Women's Brain Health Initiative, we call it the six pillars of brain health. And it's basic stuff, but it's stuff, I mean, isn't it always the basic stuff that we forget to do? But you know, the first one's eating well. Generally speaking, to simplify it, what's good for your heart is good for your brain. So whether that is a diet full of colorful fruits and vegetables, or decreasing the amount of red meat you eat, or Mediterranean diet, you know, anything that you can do around eating well is going to definitely improve your risk. Regular exercise. I mean, again, simple stuff, but you know, get moving. And it's not just it's not just the length, the duration, it's actually the intensity. And what's important about the intensity is it gets the blood flow working, and it moves all the garbage out of the brain. It helps you also sleep better and reduce stress, which are two more pillars. One pillar would be the sleeping. Get your sleep. And women actually need more sleep than men. Stress control. Yoga, Pilates, whatever you do, read, listen to music, put down the device, social connections, stay connected to friends, do things together. That's super important. And brain exercises, which, you know, pick up a new language, pick up a new card game. You know, one thing my mom never taught me was how to play bridge. Well, maybe that's something to learn in 10 years. But those kind of things are good to keep the brain thinking and get it
Yeah.
out of its repetitive
We
nonsense.
did an interview with Claudia Kalwas of UC Irvine, who's conducting the 90 plus study. And one of the things she said was that, you know, you have to be 90 years or older to join the study. And it's been going on for 2 decades now. And I love always pointing towards this because it's, I asked her, I said, so what was the one thing that you found? Because there were people who had amyloid plaque in their brains, but they never got Alzheimer's. I was like, well, what was the one thing that you, that kept their brains healthy? And she's like, well, honestly, we could find one thing that, and I said, what? She said, 8 hours of social engagement a day. I was like, 8 hours? Like, who has time? She's like, well, what else are you going to do when you're 90? And when we talk to people, we're using our brains, right? We're listening and we're articulating a response. We're comparing it to memory. So in a way that makes a ton of sense, right? If you're going to do something, be social. And, and so tell me a little bit about the funding initiatives. Like what, where, I mean, it sounds like everywhere needs better funding in terms of that gender lens, but where are some of the top priorities to fund in terms of research?
So I'm so embarrassed, but someone has unplugged my laptop. So I just need to quickly plug it
okay,
in.
Okay, don't worry.
The entire thing. So I'll set my picture momentarily.
Okay, yeah, got it. That's okay. That happens a lot.
Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry.
No worries.
Or maybe I forgot to plug it in. So, and again, I'm not the expert on what we're doing in terms of the funding. And I would direct people to the website, which is womensbrainhealth.org. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole pillar there around the research. The work with Jillian Einstein is very interesting. And it's, like I said, we funded a chair there with the University of Toronto.
Yeah, we've actually interviewed Jillian before. She's doing some amazing works on hormones. Yeah, she's doing great work.
Yeah. So I'm just not the expert on the area. I'm more on the advocacy and the client and the caregiving side. Yeah. But definitely I would direct anybody listening to have a look at that. Even for just the treasure trove, the website is so rich with information and tips and different kinds of studies around those six pillars. And it also talks about some of the other work that the organization is doing. So I would encourage people to go there.
Yeah, we can link to that. I guess, okay. I would love to end on just because you're in wealth management. What are some of the things women should be doing in terms of wealth to plan for a future? I mean, you know, especially perhaps if they have Alzheimer's in the family, what do you tell your clients?
So women love plans. And if women, I would really start people with the basics of financial planning, because with financial planning comes reassurance that what you're doing, what you have, what you're building is going to be there for the long term when you might need it with, for example, with Alzheimer's. So before I start talking about products, about, you know, long-term care, insurance and all sorts of stuff, which are really important things to consider, I would start with a plan and making sure that your executor and who you've designated, whether it's a trust company or an executorship, that there's someone that you're very comfortable with that is going to look after your estate in the way that you want it to be looked after. But in the meantime, powers of attorney are super, super important for people, especially with diseases that may come like Alzheimer's, because you want to entrust that person with the power over your finances and your well-being, someone that you trust and understand and understands you and how you are seeing the world. But the plan, I think, for women, and studies show that women really value a financial plan even more so than men. And it has to do with that, our emotional tie to money, with safety and security and knowledge is power. And power helps reduce stress, which helps your brain. It would really start, and I'm sorry, it's not more brilliant than that. It's starting with a really well-crafted and understood plan.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Sarah, thank you for joining us and sharing your thoughts. You know, we definitely need more funding in women's research, especially when it comes to brain health. So thank you for your efforts and your advocacy. And, you know, keep us posted. If there's new developments in research, we'd love to hear about them.
I would love to come back. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. If you missed any of this interview, don't forget to go to beingpatient.com where we post all of these interviews. Thanks, Sarah, for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks, Deborah.
Well, I hope you enjoyed today's podcast. For more information on upcoming interviews, don't forget to sign up for our newsletter at beingpatient.com. That's beingpatient.com. And send us any feedback you may have, whether it's someone you want us to interview or any comment about our podcast series. You can do so by emailing info@beingpatient.com. Thanks for listening, everyone. I'm Deborah Kahn.